Welcome, everybody. It's time again for Lead Space Radio, the only show where B2B marketing and sales leaders share their knowledge to help drive more revenue for you and your company. With your host, the host with the most, Damon Waldron. Hey, Damon.
Hey, how are you? Thanks, Paul.
All right. I don't know if you really do have the most or not here, but we'll find out today.
To be determined, I guess.
Yeah.
So, hi, everyone. My name is Damon Waldron, coming to you from Lead Space Radio. So, thank you for joining us today. We're brought to you today by Lead Space, the predictive analytics platform that helps you find your buyer. Lead Space uses predictive analytics to target the prospects who look just like your best customer. Social, web, and structured data come together under the Lead Space platform to deliver best-in-class enrichment, advanced predictive scoring, and confident lead discovery. That's Lead Space. Learn more at leadspace.com or email me directly at damon@leadspace.com. So today I'm excited to be joined by Tim Wackel. Tim's one of the top sales experts today. I'm sure many of you know him, and he's got some great tips to share. So you can learn more at timwackel.com. Today we're going to discuss the biggest sins that salespeople commit. Tim, welcome.
Thank you, Damon. Good to be here.
Yeah, Tim has some really great insights on the skills that help make salespeople excel. So we I think we have a lot to talk about. So let's get to it. Where do salespeople really shoot themselves in the foot?
How much time do we have, Damon?
About 25 minutes, but yeah.
Selling's a very difficult profession. So, before anybody comes to the conclusion that I'm throwing folks under the bus, I am under the bus as well. After 30 years of trying to figure out this silly game we call sales, I have discovered, traps that I fall into, and I think it's the same traps that a lot of sales professionals fall into, Damon. So, when you and I were chatting yesterday, the one thing we discussed was, number one, you got to get a better message. Right. I am amazed and somewhat saddened by how difficult it is for salespeople to clearly articulate who they are and what they do. There's stumbling, there's mumbling, there's ums, grunts, and moans. But at the end of the day, when somebody says, who are you and what do you do, we need to be able to formulate a message that creates what I like to call the Scooby-Doo response, right? You tell people, hey, this is what I do and this is why it's important to you, and they go, And then that's that invitation to begin a dialogue. But way too often we focus too much on who we are and how many offices we've got and, we're the best, we're the brightest, we're the fastest, and it just doesn't engage. So I see we do a lot of work, too, with sales organizations just trying to help them construct a tighter, more meaningful message.
Or even worse, just jargon. I think that's probably one of the worst things that I hear is that, my eyes just start to glaze over when I hear too much of that, too. I think the best ways are just in simple terms. Can you really explain the value prop?
And I think you're onto something there, Damon. Simplicity is key. I don't know many people that are looking for more complexity in their life, right? My coffee table at home has four remotes on it. Come on, guys. Seriously, four different remotes? So when I'm communicating in a business world, I'm trying to come in at like a fifth grade level. I want to make it as simple as possible because when I'm initially trying to get somebody's attention, it needs to be clear, concise, and compelling. I can get into the jargon and all the nitty-gritty and the bits, bytes, and bandwidth once they've raised their hand and they said, hey, that sounds interesting, tell me more. But at the highest level, it needs to be sexy, it needs to be provocative, and it needs to be simple.
Tell me about that elevator pitch. How do you go in to sell your widget? What's the first thing?
Well, I think the most important thing is you've got to get people to you got to understand why do people respond. And at the end of the day, I think people respond, Damon, because we've made them curious. I mean, I look at it, hey, if I'm going to leave somebody a voicemail message, there's one or two reasons somebody's going to call me back. The first reason they're going to call me back is because there's a sense of responsibility. And that means there's a relationship. So if I call my boss, or my boss calls, my wife calls, a friend calls, and leaves me a voicemail, I'm going to call them back because there's a sense of responsibility.
Right.
The second reason I think people respond to a message is because we've made them curious. And the challenge is, how do you go about making people curious? And what we have found over the years is that you've got to be specific. That's the first thing is you got to have some specificity. When you go home and you get the junk mail that says, dear homeowner, that's gone, right? That's not specific enough. And so when we're articulating or we're trying to get people's attention, the things we're teaching organizations to do, Damon, is to say very, very specifically, I specialize in working with people just like you. And that's not the right words, but right, I specialize in working with sales executives that have been in this vertical or in this space, right? So you're trying to be as specific as possible, but specificity alone won't get you there. You also have to be relevant, right? So I may be very, very specific on what I'm targeting, but if it's not relevant to what's going on in their world, then it doesn't matter. So those are the two keys, really. It's the 1-2 punches. Hey, do some homework. So for those folks that are listening and, you know, you're just recycling the same message over and over again, yep, eventually you'll find somebody willing to buy. But I'm a big proponent of, hey, make half the dials today, but make the dials more meaningful, make them more powerful by doing some homework. And if you just do some simple homework, you can make it specific and you can make it relevant. And if you get those two things going for you, I know you'll improve your chances of success.
Yeah, understand their problem. What problem are you solving? And I think just kind of going out there guns blazing about, you know, how your product's so great is not the route to success.
It's not going to work. And for years, I would get, and some of you may resonate with this, I'd get hung up because I didn't know exactly what their problem was, right? Because you can only gather so much intelligence via the internet. But here's what I'm going to tell you, ladies and gentlemen. Go in with a hypothesis. At least have a hypothesis. You may not be able to go in and slam your fist on the desk and go, I know this is exactly what your problem is. But use your expertise to say, hey, listen, I specialize in working with folks just like you who are having these kinds of challenges. And when you talk in those kinds of terms, and if you've done your homework, this hypothesis is either going to resonate or it's not. And if it does resonate, which I think it will, people are going to call you back going, hey, that's interesting. How did you know we were having that specific challenge? What kinds of things do you do with other organizations that are having that challenge? And it just leads to a richer, more dynamic dialogue.
Yeah. So tell me more about sort of those questions you ask. You know, as you get into, let's say, the first meeting, let's say you're sitting there, how do you go about that?
Well, I think the first thing you have to do is you have to, you've got to plan and prepare your questions in advance. And I don't see that happening. And so if I really go back to the root cause, you know, the first thing, Brandon, I've met very few salespeople that off the top of their head can ask great questions. Great questions, in my opinion, need to be planned and prepared in advance. As a matter of fact, if we really back up to the top and you look at how much time, and I'll just ask this to everybody listening, how much time do you spend planning before each and every sales conversation? And the answer is probably little or not enough. Then the second question would be, okay, out of the time you do spend planning before a sales conversation, what percentage of that time is really spent on trying to figure out what you're going to say versus what percentage of that time is really focused on what are you going to ask? And by and large, what we discover is, A, we don't spend enough time planning for these calls, and B, the time we do spend planning, we really plan more on, hey, this is what I want to share, this is the brochure I want to leave behind, this is the message I want to communicate, and we don't spend enough time asking. And so when you ask Brandon, hey, what kinds of questions, you know, one of my favorite, and this, I mean, this is like free tip, because this will work for darn near anybody in any space, is I like to lead with, hey, listen, I sell blank, right? You figure out what blank is. So in my world, I sell sales training, and you know what? There's a ton of options out there. Brandon, here's what I'm really interested in. How in the world is somebody in a position like yours, how do you choose?
Right.
And so if we unpack that, Brandon, what we discover and what we've discovered over the years is, you know, when you show up and you say, hey, man, I sell blank and there's a ton of options out there, that is very low pressure. You don't sound like a pushy salesperson. And for most of us, there are a lot of other options out there. So I can show up and go, look, Brandon, here's the deal, man. I sell sales training and there's literally thousands of guys out there that do exactly what I do. But here's what I want to know. How in the world is somebody in a position like yours? So that's kind of a certain amount of I'm elevating you, I'm respecting you, you play a role. So when I look at somebody, I go, man, listen, how in the world is somebody in a position like yours? How do you choose?
Right.
And the important thing is most salespeople use the decide word. So I say, how do you choose? And we coach people all the time, Brandon. If you want to know how you're doing on questions, here's the real simple litmus test. Two things happen after you ask a great question. The first thing is there's pause.
Right.
Because if you're asking a question,
they chew on it, right?
Ask them, they've got the answer. So the first thing is there's pause. And then the second thing that happens is the first words out of their mouth is they're going to say, hey, you know, that's a good question. And so when I ask this question, I don't know, the vast, vast majority of the time there's pause. And the vast, vast majority of the time the sales executive I'm talking with says, you know, that's a pretty good question. Because it really gets them to think differently about, you know, well, how are you going to figure this thing out? And again,
it's more collaborative. You're kind of on their side in a way.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, I think that for me, and just in the sales conversations that I've been in, and I'm a marketer, I'm not a salesperson, but just thinking to all those different times, you know, when people can really reach me on the human level, that's what works. I think definitely far and away, that seems to be the best technique or overall theme.
It is, and to get there, you got to ask questions, and that's it, and it's just the opposite of what we all want to do. You know, we all want to show up, and we just want to just blow people away with how great we are. And I think what I've learned over the years, Damon, is that if you really want to blow people away, you don't blow them away by what you say, you blow them away by what you ask.
Right.
You know, that's where people go, whoa, only somebody who's really knowledgeable, really experienced, and really smart would ask me that kind of a question. Because when you go in and you ask need, budget, time frame, fit, decision making, I mean, come on. You are playing me like a chump. You're acting like a peddler. Peddlers right. ask questions that are solely based on, hey, I want to know how the deal's going to work. So instead of acting like a peddler, act like a partner and ask questions that are really, it's like, hey, man, I'm not here to sell you anything, but I'd love to help you buy. And if we're the right company, let's do this. But if not, that's okay. No harm, no foul.
Yeah, I think that's great advice. You know, I think of, you know, a couple different roles with the SDRs versus, you know, the sales reps. And, you know, the SDRs, they have to actually do some level of qualification. So I think that they fall into some of the BANT stuff. But, you know, maybe leading with something that's a bit more friendly and, like, collaborative, like you're suggesting, makes a lot of sense.
Exactly. Well, I think it does, and it seems to work for our clients. But, again, if there was, like I tell people, Damon, if there was one idea that we knew was going to work all the time in every situation, I'd be having this conversation from my jet. I'm not. So, you know, it's you got to experiment. You got to try different things. You got to figure out what's your style and what's your stride.
Got it. So clearly going in guns blazing about your product, big sin. What are some of the other sins that salespeople commit?
You know, I think another one of the big sins is, quite frankly, salespeople don't know how to follow up. And if I could give them advice, my advice would be stop giving up. There's a lot of research out there, and I consult multiple sources, Damon, but at the end of the day, especially new business opportunities, you're going to have to try at least 5 different times to reach a contact. And way too often, and I get this, way too often we give up way too easily. You know, we leave a voicemail, we leave a second, we leave a third, and nobody ever calls us back. And we just want to pack our bags and go home. And I get that because I have that same feeling. But when we look at follow-up, you know, one of the biggest sins I think I see salespeople commit is they will come to me and I'll say, hey, so tell me about this opportunity, what's going on? And they'll say, well, you know, the prospect's not getting back to me. And the reason they're not getting back to me is because I think they're just not interested. And my number one question is, are you sure they're not interested? Is there a possibility that perhaps you're not interesting?
Yeah.
And that when we coach people and we coach organizations, Brandon, on putting together follow-up campaigns, it's really about creating a buzz, creating a vibe. And people are, and eventually you wear people down. And I hate saying it that way, but eventually people are like, you know what? These people are genuinely interested in having a conversation with me. These people are genuinely interested in doing business with me. And so when you look at follow-up, it's two simple things. I mean, the 20-second lesson is there's a message and a medium. And most follow-up messages are pathetic. Hey, I'm checking in. Hey, do you have any questions for me? Hey, did you get my proposal? Oh, wow. That makes me want to just pick up the phone and call you back.
I think I just went to sleep. Yeah.
Yeah, our messages aren't very good. And then the other thing we really try to rant on is the mediums. And I think salespeople, by and large, on the planet, use one of two primary mediums. The first is they use the phone.
Right.
And we've already talked about this. You know, you go in somebody's voicemail, it is hard to be clear, concise, and compelling. And then the second medium they use is email. So you're using two of the most difficult, busiest, crowdiest? I don't even know what the word is.
Crowded. Yeah.
Out there. And you're killing yourself. You're killing yourself. So think of your message, think of your medium, and quit giving up so soon.
Got it. We're actually about to take a break to hear a word from our sponsor. So going to come back and hear a lot more tips from Tim Wackel. Thanks so much.
When you use the Premier Rewards Gold Card from American Express, the rewards points can keep on multiplying. Buy 3 with triple points on airfare. Buy 2 with double points on gas and groceries. And a single point for pretty much every other dollar you spend on the card. Then, start choosing from over 1 million rewards to redeem all those points. Apply today and the annual fee for the first year is on us. Call 1-800-AXP-GOLD or visit axpgold.com. The annual fee for the card is $175. See terms, conditions, and restrictions at axpgold.com.
Do you want a free analysis of your inbound marketing? Do you want it in 30 seconds or less?
then check out Marketing Grader, the free marketing tool from HubSpot. It's simple. Just go to marketinggrader.com, enter the URL that you want to analyze, and Marketing Grader will instantly give you a detailed report grading your lead generation, mobile marketing, social media, competitive benchmarking, and more. It's simple, it's powerful, and it's free. MarketingGrader.com.
And now back to Damon and his guest.
Hey, so we're talking to Tim Wackel, sales expert, about the biggest sins that salespeople commit. And we were just talking about how, you know, on follow-up, that's another place where people really fall down. And, you know, they're using email, they're using the phone, but sometimes that just doesn't work that great. Tim, do you want to keep going about what does work?
Well, I think you have to know your audience. And so, you know, just some quick tips for your listeners. I mean, we send postcards. And
really?
Guys, I'm not talking about a product catalog. People are like, well, how many products can I jam on the back of a postcard? Listen, you're not hearing me. You know, we do custom postcards that are kind of fun and cute. And here's the bottom line is, you know, somebody gets something via the U.S. mail, especially a postcard. You don't have to open up an envelope. If it's got some sort of fun or intriguing picture on it and they flip it over, and I'm just like, hey, listen, man, I've been trying to connect with you. I know you're really, really busy. Look for a phone call from me next week. Remember, I said 80% of new business opportunities today happen after 5 failed attempts to connect. And so I don't want my 5 failed attempts to be 5 voicemails or 5 emails. I want to mix in some other mediums. So I might send a postcard. I might send lumpy mail. Lumpy mail is when we put something in an envelope and we mail it. I mean, it's, you know, Randy, Damon, you go home and you get junk mail and you throw it away without even opening it. But if you feel like there's something in the envelope, if the envelope has some dimension to it, you're like,
if it's
ooh.
In a FedEx. Like,
yeah,
oh,
it's
yeah.
Like prize inside. FedEx is another good thing to use. I've been known to send a piece of certified mail. Yeah, and again, I wouldn't be prospecting cold calling, but if I've got a somebody that I've been working with and we got a proposal on the table, and maybe this doesn't happen to you guys, but every once in a while they just go silent on me. And I'll spend $10 to send a piece of certified mail or a piece of registered mail to get their attention. And then, yeah, I want to make sure that my message inside that medium is powerful as well. But if you're just following up using the phone, and if you're just following up using email, I think you're going to a gunfight with a stick. You know, you're not taking advantage of all the resources that are in front of you.
No, I totally think that makes sense. I mean, I think it's good to zig when everyone else zags sometimes, especially as it gets so crowded and there is so much noise. You know, I've done a lot of work on the email side of things, and it's all about rising above the noise. And if you can, you know, find a different medium, that certainly does that.
Well, and I think that's a great point. In email, you got to rise above the noise because we do a lot of email. I mean, I'm not saying I don't know an email, but you are competing. You send a postcard. How many postcards a day do you think your prospect's getting? Not many, you know?
Right.
So it is. It's like, look, find the wider gate and go through that versus trying to go through the narrow gate with everybody else.
So if you do have to go through the narrow gate with everyone else, what are some, for example, subject lines or email messages that do work better than others?
Well, subject lines, again, you got to know your audience, but, you know, I've used subject lines like, I'll go away if you want me to. I want to make sure I'm trying to demonstrate my persistence without becoming a pest. Are you just playing hard to get? One of my favorites is, have you fallen and you can't get up?
Yeah, get a laugh.
And then you know, you go right into the context of the message statement is, hey, listen, I haven't heard from you in over 3 weeks, and I'm concerned, you know, has a filing cabinet fallen on you? And you can't get up, or you're just not interested. So just reply and let me know, should I call the paramedics, or do you want me just to disengage and never bother you again? So, you know, we're just trying to have fun. And
right.
People are like, oh, my gosh, how could you use a subject line like that? It's like, well, listen, when was the last time they responded to one of your emails? Oh, it's been 6 weeks. Now, I don't think you got much to lose here, folks. Let's have some fun. But if you're like, regarding my proposal, no. Go be fun. Be informal, be fun. Don't ever cross the line. But mix it up a little bit.
Yeah, and it honestly, it can be fun. It can be working buyers working with salespeople. It can be a great collaboration, and it could be, you know, you're having a beer and having some laughs, or a small way of that could be, you know, over email, just to kind of break the ice a little bit.
Exactly.
So what are some other sins, or are those sort of the main ones that you can think of?
Well, we talked about you got to get a better message. We talked about you got to be able to ask the right kinds of questions. We talked about, you know, you got to stop giving up. I think probably, you know, number 4 on my list, Damon, might be you got to be willing to go for no. I myself, you know, I call it, I should have coined this years ago, but I always ask salespeople, do you have a bit of a hopium problem? And I know from time to time I hit the hopium pipe and it really screws up my business. And so for those of you that are curious, oftentimes as salespeople, we're always looking for a yes. We want to be liked. We want to be loved. And we're always going for a yes. And although my wishes for you are to get nothing but yeses in your life, the truth of the matter is there's going to be no's out there. And way too often we make it really difficult for the customer to give us a no. So we coach people on, hey, listen, if you can't get a yes, be willing to go for a no. Every once in a while, you need to put an elephant in the room and simply ask, hey, does this elephant belong here? I found this elephant, and it's in the room. You guys tell me, does it belong here? And it takes huge courage to be able to do this. Trust you me. It makes it a lot easier for the customer to be honest with you. And I'm not saying customers lie or lie on purpose. I'm just saying when you always walk in, you go, hey, do you like me? And are you liking this proposal? And are you looking forward to doing business? You're putting 100% of the burden of bad news on them. And people don't like to bear bad news. So be willing to go low. Be willing to go for no and see if you don't get better dialogues and more truthful conversations.
Got it. So is this sort of like just saying, hey, let's talk about this and see if there's a fit, a mutual fit? Is that really the idea?
That's the idea. I mean, probably the easiest example I could give the listeners, Damon, is if you're working for me and you ask this question, you and I are immediately going to go to the parking lot and have a coaching call. Here's the question. Would you like me to go ahead and put together a proposal? Folks, if you're asking that today, please take it out of your arsenal. And let me explain why. If sales rep A is calling on me, and I love sales rep A, great experience in the space, very intelligent. They've got asking great questions. They understand my business. They work for a reputable company. And sales rep A says, would you like me to go ahead and put together a proposal? I'm going to say yes. If sales rep B calls on me, and sales rep B is wasting my time, right? Inexperienced, ineffective, doesn't understand my space. I really don't care that much for the company he works for. And I'm looking for an excuse. I want to get out of this conversation. I want to get off the call. I want to get out of the meeting. And sales rep B says, would you like me to go ahead and put together a proposal? So it's this exact same question. Sales rep B says, you want me to go ahead and put together a proposal? I, like most of you, are going to say yes. Because we're a non-confrontational sort of being. Right. And if I say yes, then you know what? Yeah, that conversation is fixing to get over. So, you know, sales rep A and sales rep B both got the same answer, but only one rep was I really interested in working with. So when we take, would you like me to go ahead and put together a proposal, we say, hey, guys, that's got way too much hopium. You're trying to go for a yes. And so we tell folks, Damon, hey, take the hopium out of that and ask the question this way. I've really enjoyed our conversation today, and I can't help but believe that we ought to be doing business together. But I sense that putting together a proposal is still a little bit premature. Mm. What are your thoughts? So go back to the earlier example. Sales rep A says, hey, I've enjoyed our conversation, Tim, but I think it's still a little bit premature to put together a proposal. What are your thoughts? I'm like, no, dude, bring it. I want a proposal. I mean, when was the last time you had a prospect or a customer actually beg you to go to the next step? That's a very powerful feeling. So it's like, okay, yeah, this is good. If you look at sales
it's
rep
like
B, sales rep, what's that? Yeah. And if we go to sales rep B and sales rep B says, hey, would you like me to go ahead and put together a proposal? What are your thoughts? Or I think it's still premature to put together a proposal. What are your thoughts? He's put an elephant in the room. The elephant's premature, and I'm going to grab onto that elephant. I'm going to say, you know what? It is a bit premature. Now, is that truly the answer? No, but he's made it easy. I mean, I'm not going to sit there and say, no, I think you're a jerk. But if he tests the water by saying, I think it's still premature. What are your thoughts? I'm going to be like, no, you're exactly right. It's still premature. So he walks away, and he's not putting something in his pipeline that doesn't exist.
Right.
Because he's given me an easier way to tell him no.
And the buyer's not on their heels. So, yeah.
Exactly.
Totally makes sense. So one last thing that I was thinking about is, you know, our CRO here, Pat O'Brien, he says, you know, the mark of a great salesperson is one who can make small deals big and close deals faster. What are your tips for making deals bigger?
It goes back to what we've talked about already. It really goes back to your discovery. Way too often when we're not asking the right kinds of questions, we're just dropping in a point solution. So like in my world, and that's the world I relate to best, somebody can call and say, hey, listen, Tim, I want to buy, you know, we're interested in getting some sales training on how to do a better job prospecting. Okay, great. You know, we'll come in there and we will rock your world. We will help your people become better at prospecting. Well, right away, I've missed the boat.
Right.
And the reason I'm not making that deal bigger is because I haven't asked the right questions. Like, okay, so I understand you feel like your team needs help in prospecting. Why do you think they need help in prospecting? What would it look like if they were better in prospecting? What would that mean to you financially if they were better at prospecting? Okay, now just because we're doing a better job of prospecting, though, then what happens inside the selling cycle? Okay, are they doing a good job qualifying? Because if you prospect and you fill a pipeline full of a bunch of things that aren't qualified correctly, then now we're causing a bust. So let's talk about your qualification. Okay, now that we talked about the qualification, you know, what about their presentation skills? Now that we know what our best deals are and we're going to go after them, how about your presentation skills? You feel like you guys are really short up on that, or is there some opportunity to do some help there?
Right.
So I guess what I'm trying to demonstrate, Brandon, is instead of just going after the initial, hey, we need help in prospecting, it's like, look, I'd love to help you and I want to help you, but before we go down that rabbit hole, let's look at the entire landscape. And how does what I'm going to help you with, how does that tie into other areas of the business? And so now instead of putting together a proposal for prospecting, it's like, hey, guys, let's work on prospecting. Let's work on qualifying. Let's work on presentations. Let's work on closing. Let's work on relationship building and whatever else you need. So I think it's the ability to not take the bait. As
yep.
a sales rep, you need to make sure that you can pride yourself on a delayed gratification. And don't take the initial bait. You know, say, okay, hey, listen, that's great. I want to help you, but how does that tie into other parts of the business? What does that mean to you personally? What does that mean to you professionally? And be willing to stay high and look far and wide before you start going down the pathway to putting together a proposal.
Got it. Totally makes sense. Tim, really wanted to thank you for all your tips today. It's time to wrap up, so I just wanted to remind everyone to check out the rest of the Lead Space Radio shows on iTunes. You'll hear insights from guests like Jill Conrath, Craig Rosenberg, Ann Hanley, and many, many more. Tim Wackel, sales expert, thank you so much. And you can read more about everything Tim does at timwackel.com. Thank you, guys.
You've been listening to another example of Lead Space Radio, the only show where B2B marketing and sales leaders share their knowledge to help you drive more revenue. Today's show was produced in part by Jim Obermeyer on behalf of the SLMA Live Radio Network.